Hi, everybody. Welcome to Life Hacks. This is Daryl Scott. We have a gentleman that we're going to talk to today who, don't get me wrong, I've known since elementary school. And don't get me wrong, that makes us pretty old. But from where I come from and from where I have sat over the years of kind of paying attention to his career, he's done a whole bunch of different things. So there is no one real topic to talk about. The one thing I want to focus on is his discipline, determination, and his willing to, I'll say, give back to help out Black and brown people. His name is Brian Hall. He currently is the CEO of JIT Services. He also just got a company called Specialized Construction that does paving. It always seems to be construction, but there are many other offshoots that he does, many other things that he has done. He started a mentoring program for an elementary school here in the city of Cleveland. He's just done a lot of things. And I just want to talk about the perseverance that he has, the attitude that he has, how he acquired all this knowledge to keep doing these things. So first of all, Brian, welcome to the show. It's great to have you, sir. How you doing?
It's great, Daryl. Good to be with you.
Thank you, sir. Now,
and we do go way back.
We're not going to tell all the stories of running around. This is the funniest thing. We've been friends since 480 was built on Lee Road.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. That's right.
My walker. Hey, go ahead.
In fact, I was at an event last night and I met the mayor of Maple Heights.
Right.
Been there. What's her name? Ann Blackwell?
Yes, I think I do know her. Yes.
So I told her where I grew up. I said, I grew up the last street in Cleveland. Before 480 was a highway.
Right. She probably looked at you and goes, I have no clue what you're talking about.
Yeah, she didn't grow up in Maple Heights, but no. She's doing a great job there now.
Yes. So let's start off with just your career, where you started, how you started, and to the point where you are right now. Let's go there.
Sure, Daryl. I'll try to consolidate the story. You know, everything for me begins and ends on that street we talked about with my parents. And I'll tell a little bit more about how they ended up there and what's important about that street. But, you know, when I left to go to college, my dad had a trucking business, sometimes had a paycheck, sometimes didn't have a paycheck. I never felt there was something for me to join. I went to school to study architecture. During my second year of college, I was home for spring break and I did the bills. I was doing the billing for my dad's company. They were doing work out in Brook Park for Ford, moving engine blocks in and out of the plant and into the warehouse and back out. And every day it was a big stack of bills. And by the end of the week, I had billed $20,000 to Ford Motor Company. Mm-hmm. And I multiplied that times 52 and said, wait a minute, my dad has a $1 million company.
Right.
Had no idea. Went back to college, decided maybe a month or two later that I was going to change my major to business management. I was minoring in business already. So I changed my major to business management and I was in a rush to get out of school. I got out in 2 years and a quarter. So I was cramming all my business classes every quarter, 21 hours, 18 hours to get out and went to work for his company. So that's where things began. And for me, that was part of my upbringing was always to own something and not to work for anybody. I was taught that at a young age, watching my father and the things that he had us do to learn how to do that, whether it was pulling the wagon to pick up bottles and taking them to the store for neighbors and mm-hmm. getting a percentage of the money that the bottles produced. Mm-hmm. Or my dad would bring a load of watermelons from Alabama when he was a truck driver. And we'd sit on 55th and Broadway on the back of the trailer with a sign that said watermelons for $1 to $3. And we would get paid, me and my cousins would get paid based on what we sold. So we had to hustle. Mm-hmm. So started at a very young age. I went from the trucking business to expanding it to logistics. I became president of the company at a very young age. They had a good company, but also needed systems and things put in place to take it from, you know, a pop and pop organization to a corporation. And I was able to use my education and kind of just my willpower to learn and get it going at the same time. And then went on to do a bunch of things with that business, grew it, bought it eventually from them, had a restaurant, had packaging and shipping stores. I tried a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Probably one out of three worked, maybe one out of four. But every time something didn't work, you figured, okay, I learned that. Let me go back at it and do it a little bit differently this time.
So you've had all these different businesses, and granted, not everything is a success. What are you learning from one that you're now applying to the next one, to the next one, and to the next one?
Yeah, probably the most important thing is, and people say it all the time, but maybe don't believe it, that businesses are really people. Mm-hmm. People are your greatest asset. And so, you know, who you have either in partnership with you or as your senior executives, who your professional team is number one. The speed of information, number two. You know, you can't fly a plane if you don't have dials and information feeding back to you to tell you how fast you're going, how high you're going, your pitch, and all those other things. It's same with a business. Those people who study that information and know it the best typically win. And I've had, you know, more than one lesson about, you know, not paying attention to the dials or not paying close enough attention to the dials. So those are some of the lessons.
So while you are running, creating, implementing things, at the same time, you're educating yourself to do more. I want people to understand the drive and discipline that you have and what you kind of must do all the things that you've done. Because I think, don't get me wrong, I'm not passing judgment. Okay, yes, I kind of am. The young folks of today are of that, I call it a lottery mentality. I want to go out and win $8 million. I want to go to the casino and win $8 million. I don't want to work.
Yeah.
When we grew up, like you said, it was newspapers, watermelons. It was going, yeah, going to get, yeah, the bottles. And I don't know if you remember going up to Mr. Richard's store.
Absolutely.
And dropping all the stuff off. And yeah, it was... And you became very responsible at a very young age. And I think that's the thing that kids are missing out on now. I was the first one home from school because mom worked later than I got home. Dad worked later when I got home. And my sister was further away, so it took her a while to get home. So it was make sure the house is clean. I had to call, and there was the parents' authority all along the street because she walked up and everybody knew each other. And that's the other thing. You had everybody on the street kind of knew who every kid was. You've taken all of that, all of those characteristics, and you apply it to your adult life now?
Yeah, absolutely. But I think in terms of the business, because you talked about the work you have to do and the lottery mentality, I would say, you know, there's people of our generation who had that mentality too, maybe mm-hmm. not as many. But I think part of it is, you know, finding your passion. And somewhere within me, I've always had the interest in business. I remember when Black Enterprise magazine first came out in junior high school. Mm-hmm. Loved reading that magazine. I remember when Mr. Bustamante opened First Bank National Association, mm-hmm. seventh grade. I had a little bit of money and bought stock in the corporation. And then reading the papers and trying to see if my stock went up or down. I remember when the Cavaliers were founded in 1970 and they were traded over the counter. I remember they were public stock and stock never moved. But I looked at that. So later in life, you know, I'm reading about people who have done things that were extraordinary. One is Warren Buffett, and two is Reginald Lewis. And in both cases, they were ferocious readers to educate themselves. Mm-hmm. Reading corporate annual statements and annual reports. And I just remember reading that book. And it's the most boring reading you can do.
But you learned a lot.
But then part of it said, well, if you have this passion and this is what you want to do, and here's two people who are very successful at it, then you got to spend some time, studying what makes businesses tick and what may happen next. And so, yeah, I'm still doing that every day. I have by no stretch of the imagination got my lottery ticket yet. Mm-hmm. Doing okay. Maybe better than some, but, you know, God blessed us with tremendous abilities. And for Black men, I don't care what you are doing, and women, you look around and you see people who may have started on third base and think they hit a home run.
Right. Yep.
And you know that you had to, back to our baseball days, but and run like hell and slide into first base just to get on first base or maybe get hit by a pitch.
Right. Yes. Yes. It was get on any way you can.
Get on any way you can. And, you know, I'm not saying that to be derogatory to other people, but there are. I mean, people had generations of head starts. Mm-hmm. You know, I was just in a meeting today where a guy who's young relative just bought a company. And I don't think it meant anything for him to say what he said, but it struck me. He said, you know, it's a nice little starter business. And just said it so casually, like, you know, yeah, this is good. Something for him to start with. Like, A, there's going to be more businesses after this.
Right.
And B, this little business, starter business, you know, it's good for him. It's this, mm-hmm. It was so casual. And I'm like, wow. Wow.
I guess some people don't understand the struggle that goes with it. And then it's like they become satisfied with that starter business. They don't think past the starter business. Once you get the starter business, my attitude is I got to start, where am I taking the starter business and where is it leading to? And I'll use, maybe it's a good or bad analogy. I use Dr. Dre coming up with Beats. And then all of a sudden, Apple comes along and buys it for $3 million. Do we really think that he...
$4
billion. Oh, $3 billion. Okay, my mistake.
Yeah, right, billion.
But, and that's what you can turn it into. And I don't think we see that. We kind of stop our enthusiasm at that starter business. And maybe you can take a break for 2-3 weeks, but you got to start preparing for the next one and what you're going to do or how you're going to make that starter business grow.
But that all depends on what you want to do.
Right.
I mean, so not everybody wants to have Beats by Dre. Some people want, you know, a business, you know, a telephone store. You know, they want something they go to every day and takes care and lives a good life. I mean, Mr. Powell's store up the street from us.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what else Mr. Powell did. And,
I don't either. No, I don't.
Could have been a billionaire doing something else, but he was there. He was there every day when we walked home from school.
That's correct.
Wanted some chips and a pop and some candy. And,
yeah, back then you could use 50 cent and buy all of that. But we won't get it. A lot of stuff. I tell you what, let's do this. Let's take a break and we'll come back and we'll continue this conversation with Brian Hall on Life Hacks. We'll be right back. to Life Hacks with Daryl Scott. Our guest today is Brian Hall, who currently is the CEO and owner of Specialized Construction. He also owns another company called JIT Services. Now, it seems as though both of these are based in a construction setting, so to speak. Is that a passion of yours? Is it, I think that it's a constant way to help people who, if they're trying to start a business or trying to grow something, these are essential things that they need.
Yeah, I'd say, Daryl, JIT Services is more operation services, logistics related. We provide people for operations like the valet operation at the airport. We provide the people to Standard Parking that runs that, some of the other parking people, some operations in UCI. So not necessarily construction, but operations management. And that was an outgrowth of being in the transportation logistics business for so many years. Specialized Construction, which I acquired with partners last year, is definitely in the construction business. And that was intentional. I was looking for a business that I felt the market was right. And given the amount of spending that's going to happen on infrastructure for roads and bridges and railroads, having a company that can compete in that market space, building roads, I think we'll have opportunities, you know, for the rest of my career, depending on how long I decide to do this. So that was intentional. I got in transportation and trucking because my dad was in it, learned a little bit about managing people. I think that's really the most important thing, and serving customers. And then you take that and you apply it across whatever else you decide to do.
Let's quickly mention your people skills, because you seem to have a lot of that, from the people that you manage to acquiring people as partners and getting together and doing different projects and things like that. First of all, how important is it to have people skills? And if you had to describe yours, what would it be?
I guess answer your first question. Relating to people is everything. It's how you get things done and how people get things done through you. If there's a wall or a bad filter, it's just going to hurts the process. So that's first of all. I've always been kind of a quiet kid, sort of in the background growing up. And I guess I observed family, friends, whatever. Never had a desire to be out front or in public. But funny, when I got home from college, I decided to sing in the church choir, Lisaville Baptist Church.
You sang?
I sang at Lisaville in the angelic voices. And I did it intentionally, because if you can stand up in front of a group of people and sing, you certainly can stand up in front of them and talk. So that was me trying to work my way out of my shell. And then, you know, in terms of just relationship with people, the people say I'm easygoing. I have a easy kind of personality about me. Probably doesn't help me in every situation, but in a lot, I think it does. And, you know, I bought a company last year that's 40 or 50 years old, 45 employees. I didn't know any of them. I walk in, very few of them look like me. Mm-hmm. And I'm the new boss and owner. And I worked very hard to get to know who I was working with and to let them get to know me, to show my vulnerabilities. Our first staff meeting, we were doing drug and alcohol safety. And the woman was great. She was just teaching us about what happens when you smoke this, what happens when you drink that, what happens. Well, I had just come back from a vacation with my wife where I happened to drink too much. And when she talked about what happens with your brain,
right,
drinking. So I was vulnerable in front of my 40 and some new employee. I said, you know what? I just got back from this vacation in Mexico. And that just explains why whatever happened the rest of that day, I can't remember a thing that happened. My wife had to tell me, you were so drunk. So I think when I did that in the first meeting with the group of employees, I think they all just went, oh, okay. He's a real guy.
Right. He's human. He's just like us.
Just like us. And we've been getting along great since then.
So, and this brings me to another point. You are a man of color. You own several businesses, of which I don't want to break down the percentages because I don't know, but obviously you're dealing with a lot of people who don't look like you. How do you break that barrier? And you have to do it quickly because you're the boss, you're making changes when the first week, 2 weeks, and they've got to be impressed with you, yet want to work for you, and hopefully you two share the same, I'll call it cause, and making the business grow.
Yeah. That's a tough one. I've been in situations early in my career with my dad's company where we had some operations, Teamster operations, in places in the country where they didn't like the fact that we owned the company. Mm-hmm. But one thing I did even then, I decided if I was going to go to St. Louis for, you know, to visit the customer and meet the team, et cetera, I would take one of our laborers to lunch. So I'm going to go to lunch with somebody. And I go and I just tell them my story, tell them my dad's story. I learned so much. Mm-hmm. People thought that the government gave us the business. I'll never forget, I was out to lunch with one guy. We all just thought, you know, because you're Black, the government just gave you a company. And when they learned that my, you know, dad hadn't graduated high school and came up here and, you know, made this thing happen, they gained some respect for who we were and what we were doing. Mm-hmm. I never won them over completely, not all of them. And the new case, you know, we do, I think it's as times are different. I think I was fortunate to pick a company whose owners I felt, even though they didn't look like me, I felt like we had a connection, that we were about something. And they had people in their company that were the same as them. And so it just helped. I mean, I really think in 1 year we have, I would knock on a little bit of wood, but I think we didn't lose anybody that wasn't going to leave anyway. And we've gained people. And I think they know that, hey, this is a guy. They say, you've done a lot of good stuff in life. I think we can get on board with that. Let's mm-hmm. let's try to figure out how we can help you do some more good stuff.
Right.
So I've been blessed, Daryl.
What is the research that you do when it comes to acquiring a business? I mean, I'm sure you have options of what to purchase, what not to purchase. What are the things that you look for?
Yeah. Well, first of all, you got to have the money. Right. For what you're going to do. And that's always, you're figuring out how you raise the money. But let's assume money's not an object.
Right.
You know, you have some parameters, things that you think fit your strengths, things that, like I said, with the road construction, I knew that there was a market that was growing. So I knew there'd be opportunities to win business more than what was there today. But then the other part of it was the owners that I met with, and their team, we just kind of got along good from the beginning and we built some trust, and it served us well because a year into it, there were some things that they told me was going to be blue and I found out were, you know, turquoise, and, you know, things that just weren't exactly like they should have been, but we worked them out together very openly. They weren't things that they were hiding or being deceitful about, just you couldn't think of everything. You couldn't know everything.
You've done a lot of things with the business, things that go on. A long time ago, you started something called the Tremont Elementary School Advisory Group. My first question will be why?
When I was in college, I pledged Kappa. One of the tenets of our fraternity is community service. We had little brothers. We were in big bro. We had big brothers, big sisters. We were big brothers when we were in college. When I got home, it took a while to find the right thing. I joined Big Brothers Big Sisters, kind of this hit and miss, because it takes you, the parent, the child, everybody. It's got to be a good match,
a good fit. Yep.
But I was visiting an elementary school with Leadership Cleveland, and I had just read the book, The Conspiracy to Destroy Black Boys. And it talked about how Black boys perform equal to their peers until about the fourth grade. And what happens that causes them no longer to perform? And what are some of the factors? So I'm at this school, white principal, mainly white group, Black kids. And he said, I can choose who's going to drop out in the second grade. I can predict in the second grade. He said, I can predict by attendance, by home life, by parents, by a bunch of things. He said, but I can see the challenge. And so I just asked him, I said, well, having read this book, talking to them, told him about, I said, what would you have me do? How could I help? And that's how we started the advisory group. He said, I'll pick out the boys that I don't think are going to make it. And if you have some men that are willing to help, I said, we'll come every week and we'll work with these young men. And, you know, the thing I like people to know, because when you do these things, you do it and you want to feel good and have, oh, look what I did in this great success. Of our 13 or 14 boys, almost half of them ended up in trouble with the law at some point. So it's not like we completely changed their trajectory in life.
Right.
But I can tell you 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, about 8 of them. And this was in 1990. And this is 2023. About 8 of them I'm still in touch with today.
Good.
Several who did get in trouble, growing up in Longwood, and all the things that were available to them, did their time. Now married with kids, good jobs, great fathers, very proud of them. Very, very proud of them. So that's how that happened. And that's why it happened.
Not that we always need to have a pat on the back, but that's got to be a good feeling for you. At least number one, to start it, to get 50%, and even if they still stay in contact with you, it's got to make you feel good. Do you still do more of those things? Are you still involved with kids of young ages?
Not the way I was, because I had my own children, nieces and nephews.
Yes. Yes.
Grandchildren. I eventually had to turn my focus to my own children and family. But, you know, the boys grew up to be men and we never lost touch. So, you know, they'll come over to my house, not as much as we would like to get together. We'll go to a Cavs game. They always say, hey, you know, someone was here. I got married last year in my wedding reception. There were three that were here. And they're like, anything you need, you call us. One lives up the street. I'm always available. So we have kind of the relationship that you talked about, you grew up with and I grew up with the adults in our neighborhood.
You know,
and they say to me, not all of them, but most of them say to me, you were the only father that I had.
Right. I just think of in the, I don't know, 4-block radius of where we lived, how many adults did we know? How many adults knew our name?
Yeah.
You know, I could walk over to your house and somebody would say, Daryl, where are you going?
Yeah.
And it would be like, oh, just relax. I'm just going over to see Brian and the family and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, no. Everybody knew you on all the streets. And then if you deliver papers like I did, and I think you did.
Yep.
You knew everybody because you delivered the papers up and down the street.
Right. And then you were visible. You were, I always tell the story that, no, we didn't have Game Boys or whatever, all the toys that they use inside. We had to go outside. My mom used to get migraines. And it was like, it wasn't, do you want to go outside? It was like, go outside. and then you could go down the street to where there was the Burgesses, the Whites. It was everywhere. All right, we're going to take a break. We will be right back on Life Hacks with Daryl Scott. Welcome back to Life Hacks. Daryl Scott here. Brian Hall on the other end. Brian is a multitasking businessman. I will say it that way. Brian, with everything that you do, all the boards that you're on, all the things that you're involved with, I think people need to understand or need an example of how you manage your time. I mean, if you have if you have the companies, you've got to be there. You've got to be at the other one. You have to, there are decisions you have to make. There's meetings you have to be at. All of the companies are not on the same block on Lee Road where you can just walk around the corner and go to one. What's your time management skills? How do you do all of this?
So, there's a lot of things. But I'll start with, I don't do it well. Let's just get that out there.
Okay.
I try to do too many things and don't have enough time. But some time ago, and I think it was a Franklin Planner, or, you know, Steve Covey or somebody, I was looking at it. And there was a thing where it says, do a budget of your time. Like, you got to eat, you have to sleep.
Right.
And you basically just take a week. 168 hours, subtract how much time you sleep, subtract how much time you eat or prepare food, what's left, work, et cetera. When you go through that exercise, you realize there's not a lot of time in a week. So I don't watch a lot of TV. Never have. I like sports, as you know, love the Cavs. Football. So those are things that I will watch, but sometimes watch while I'm doing something else.
Right.
I have always been an early riser, but I have worked to make myself up even earlier. My construction company, people arrive starting at 6, sometimes 5:45. I try to be there between 6 and 7. That means I'm up at 5 at the latest, sometimes 4:30, and it's tough. Ooh, it's tough.
Yes, it is.
However, I also learned about myself that I am more productive first thing in the morning, and I fade as the evening goes on. So I try not to have difficult, detailed tasks to do in the evening because it'll take me twice as long than if I did it at 5 o'clock in the morning. I'll knock it out in no time. If I try to do it at night, I'm going to get distracted. It just doesn't work. So those are some of my kind of parameters. Then I think it's, you know, what's important to you. And I've had this philosophy in life. My friends have heard me say it. I work hard and I play harder. So I don't sacrifice. Finding a chance to go fishing. I've been relearning to play the trumpet. So I have a class every couple of weeks, which means I got to find time to practice, which is hard. You know, working out is important to try to stay healthy. And I'm not great at it, but there's, you know, I may have a week where I only do it twice, but I have other weeks where I do it 5 times.
Right.
And I'll get a half hour in. And then with work, I've got an assistant.
Okay.
And not only do I have a personal assistant in my business, I know that I need people who will pay attention to things that I don't. I talked about it earlier when I said, you know, in a plane, you got to watch all the dials and whatever. So, you know, some people are a lot more detail oriented and will do that. And then they can alert me. Hey, watch out. You know, this is getting ready to happen because I've been paying attention to the dials. I know you're out there doing whatever.
Right.
So surrounding yourself with people that complement your strengths, their strengths may be your weaknesses. All of that goes into having time. I mean, it's just no question. And I have an assistant that is available almost 24 hours a day. I mean, she's got to have her own life too. But she always tells me, don't worry, if you need something, call me. I don't care what time it is, you can always call. And I don't do that. But she's always telling me I can because, you know, it's 9 o'clock and going to bed. And I remember, oh, yeah, I got to get a rental car for that trip next week. And then the last thing I'll say, Darryl, in terms of time management is I am a fanatic with to-do lists. You know, I probably have 600 to-do lists in my phone now because I don't delete them. I need to delete the old ones.
Right.
But I always have an active list, particularly on the weekends when I know I have a lot of time.
Right.
And I'm not looking at my calendar. During the week, I got a calendar. So I got things I got to do. So I might just say, hey, you got a busy day, but you need to get these four things done today. Complete those. I got some stuff I'm going to do when we get finished. In fact, my attorney just sent me a note. I'm standing by waiting on that document. So that's how I manage my time. And as I began, not well. I got too many things going on and have too many things that fall through the cracks.
I just think, and this is me looking from the outside. Part of it is this is what you want to do.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
You wouldn't have it any other way, but that's the sacrifice. In order to get to point C, you have to accomplish or worry about all of these things. And I think that's what people are afraid of. You brought up to-do list. I have a desk calendar here. You can't really see everything that's on here. I write things down.
Right.
For example, getting ready for you, I was on Google looking up stuff. I've got a list of questions and a bunch of different things. As you talk, I think of things. But I think part of that too is our brains are active. And we realize that if I slow down, I won't call it do nothing, but if we kind of shut off, we feel lost. And I'm just that much further behind. Yeah. But I will sit up on Sundays. I go through my list. Once I'm done with that list, I make the list for the next week.
Right.
The wife laughs at me, it's everything because I don't want to miss anything.
Right.
And I think that's what we're afraid of is that we're going to miss something. So, and don't get me wrong, it's going to get worse when you retire. it really will. But that's just to say that now. Back to the business part of this, and I think in the situation that you're in, dealing with people who don't look like you, do you have issues with companies or organizations that you're a part of where you have all the knowledge, you know what's going on, you know what you want, but they don't necessarily see eye to eye with you? And it's not because you have different ideologies, it's because your person of color?
I would say less and less.
Okay.
Less and less. And the only reason I can say that is I've been in this community since 1980. I've not only had businesses that I've been trying to grow, I've also been on the boards of the Rock Hall, University Hospital, United Way, Visiting Nurse Association. I've done my time, I guess is what I'm trying to say. I've given back. And in all of those places, I've tried to be true to both who I am, but also both what I believe as Black people who grew up on the southeast side of Cleveland, in a neighborhood that if you study the history, we were there because we couldn't be other places.
Right. Yep.
And we got there because there were some pioneers. Myrtle Avenue is now a historic place, by the way, because of the Black developer.
Okay.
That developed that street. Mr. Randelson, who was our baseball coach, he and my dad developed Colon Avenue. Mm-hmm. 19 families that all, they went and got people who had been in the war because they knew they had the GI Bill, could put $1,000 down, they could get the loans. Mr. Randelson had a mortgage company.
Yeah, yep.
So financed them and built that street. So when you know where you come from, and I'm talking to people about living on the edge of Maple Heights too, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, you know what that was like.
Yes.
Back then, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, you know, we saw the civil rights movement, but we experienced some of the racism front and center.
Right.
If you tried to walk up to Mapletown Shopping Center to do something.
Yes.
So I have taken that with me in all of my endeavors in Cleveland, whatever board I'm on, whatever I've worked on, whatever I've done. I've said it unapologetically, but I've said it with hopefully diplomacy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think while it's still there, there's no question, I've made it a little bit through the door,
right.
A little bit through the door. And my job is to both try to open it a little wider and bring other people through with me. Because I don't want people to just say, well, that's just Brian, because, you know, we know Brian, he's good. Right. He won a good one, so whatever.
Right. Yes. I think of, there are different situations where you kind of have to decide how to handle the situation. There are times you can be very diplomatic, you can be very conversational, you can keep it at a very mid-tone, so to speak. But then there are times when, don't get me wrong, you got to step up and not take crap from anybody. And that's also a way to, you don't have to yell and scream. I remember there was an occasion, I was, I don't know, 8 or 9 years old, and we were at, my mom and I were out shopping, and we were at Uncle Bill's. Once again, here we go dating ourselves.
Yeah.
On Northfield, and this woman came over with her son in the basket, and he mentioned, he called us that N-word. And my head snapped around, and my mother stood there, and in a very conversational tone, basically ripped this woman a new rectal opening.
Mm-hmm.
And was very calm about it, very matter of fact about it. And if it were not, she would have dropped the microphone.
Right.
You know, and I'm like, I learned so much from that. It's like, I don't have to pull out a gun. I don't have to do this. I don't have to walk over there and punch anybody. She verbally put them in their place. And
correct.
I think that's a thing that
correct.
Our generation from that area grew up with, because
correct.
We didn't have any real violent issues over there. It was all conversation, but then again, everybody knew everybody. I'll get to this point, and we're going to come back. I want to talk to you about travel. What's left for you to do? You buy companies, you start things, you're on this board, you're on that board. What's left?
A hell of a lot is left.
Seriously?
Yeah, a lot is left. Yeah, I mean, so I bought a company. Couple of statistics. I'm in a group of CEOs, that's a global organization, 34,000 CEOs around the world, 167 countries. There's 400 Black CEOs in the group. Mm. I said 34,000.
I heard you.
400. Okay?
Okay.
All right. So that's number one. So I'm traveling around right now. I'm involved in a project with that group to increase us by 100 in 18 months, and we're still going to be woefully underrepresented. Mm-hmm. And so, Daryl, and it's not just the numbers. It's also when you look at the things that people have. Fortune 500 companies, I think there's two black male CEOs today. Fortune 1000, I'm sorry. I think there's two, maybe two or three female. You can count on one hand.
Right.
Cleveland, and I've been away from these numbers for a little while, 24,000 black owned businesses, less than 1% have a W-2 employee. So most of the businesses are, I started my LLC, I got my own company. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with that. But compare that to Asian Americans, compare that to even Latinx Americans, we're all below where we should be. Well, Asian Americans are actually higher than their percentage in the population. But comparison to white Americans, and it's embarrassing. So how can I in any way say there's nothing left for me to do?
Okay.
It's just impossible. I mean, whether I do it for me or whether I'm helping somebody else do it, because, you know, Reggie Lewis, first black man to have a $1 billion company and to take it public.
Right.
And how long ago that was? Almost 40 years ago.
Yeah,
30 man. Years ago.
Yeah.
30 years ago. How many more have happened since then? Less than five, maybe?
Maybe.
Right. So, you know, I'm going to stop there because I get passionate about it. But
okay.
God has blessed me to be in a position to make some of this happen.
Right.
That's all I can say. My father, my mother, whatever, our neighborhood, the schools, I got the opportunity. I cannot not try to take advantage of it.
All right, man. We're going to take a break. You're listening to Life Hacks Conversations with Daryl Scott. He is Brian Hall. If I could have come on and spent time just talking about him and some of the things he's done and the kind of man he is, we'd have to do two shows. We'll be right back. I'm Daryl Scott. He is Brian Hall. He's too busy to do everything. So my question is, and you know, folks who listen to the show, you know, one of the things I always want to find out about is, what do you do to decompress? What do you do when you have off time? Brian, I know that you like to travel. Give us some of your favorite spots to travel to.
Daryl, first of all, I like the water and I like boating. And so beach vacations are always wonderful. And the place I went to that was attractive and I felt was a little off the beaten path was Zihuatanejo, Mexico, small town, not many people go to. I called what was then Continental Airlines and I'm talking to a lady, I had some miles and said, where do y'all go? Where do you go when you go somewhere? And she said, well, I go to Zihuatanejo, Mexico. I said, well, the airline people go there. That's where I'm going. So I've been there. Of late, I have been able to get to Africa because of some work that I do with this black organization I mentioned earlier. So I know black CEOs around the continent, and that's been very helpful. But the most unusual place was Belgrade, Serbia, where I had some friends in Cleveland that invited me to go once. Started working on some business opportunities there and went back probably 8-9 times, been to weddings, been to Saints Day celebrations with the family there, been out in the countryside, been in the big city. And I think this is true about Europe generally, but even more so what I heard about Eastern Europe is when you're there, you're not black, you're American. And you would love this. The Hyatt Hotel, the first night place I went to at Hyatt Hotel, the bar in the Hyatt Hotel on the lower level was called Ellington's. And when you walked in, there was Duke Ellington, Sarah Vaughan, all the way around the wall.
Oh, yeah.
Black jazz artists. And I couldn't believe I was in Belgrade, Serbia, in a bar, and that's what was there. And then I'll close with this. One night on one of my trips, they're on a river like we're on the Cuyahoga River, but they got barges that are clubs and restaurants on the river. So we go into this one barge and just having fruit salad and something else. And playing over the music in the restaurant is Curtis Mayfield's Superfly. In Belgrade, sir. But, Daryl, they don't play just the song Superfly. They play the whole album. The whole album. And I'm sitting there just like, I can't believe I'm in Belgrade, Serbia. And we're in this restaurant drinking and having some fruit and whatever. And everybody is sitting here enjoying themselves, listening to Curtis Mayfield and Superfly, the whole album. Mm-hmm. So that's why I love traveling. You never know what the experience is going to be.
So you mentioned music. What's your favorite music to listen to?
R&B one, jazz two.
Who's your favorite R&B artist, or I could say song, but you probably have 9,000 of them. So let's just pick an artist.
R&B, you got to go Vance, Earth, Wind & Fire. Solo artist, Stevie Wonder.
It's remarkable. We did grow up in the same neighborhood.
Right. I mean, what do you, you're right. 1975 at Blossom, right?
Oh, yes. And it rained.
Right.
Patti LaBelle opened up.
I didn't remember that.
Or I don't,
didn't
I don't remember. She had the, or vice versa. But yeah, that was the very first concert I ever saw, especially at Blossom. You've traveled all these places. Talk about food. What are you digesting when you go to Belgrade?
And I grew up and still am somewhat of a picky eater. Serbia is easy because they grilled meat, so it's sausages and beef and, you know, and potatoes, so it's easy. Zimbabwe, we were at a cookout and goat. They had a whole goat on a skewer and were roasting goat, some barbecue, delicious. Not a big Mexican food eater, but I like ceviche. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when you're in Mexico and they're getting the fish and the seafood fresh and cutting it and making ceviche, can't beat it.
Last question. Several people, 100 people, are listening to this show and they are young and they have an aspiration to do what you do. What advice would you give them?
First of all, you can do it. Don't let anybody tell you can't. Secondly, not only learn what it is you want to do, learn what it takes to do what you want to do. People who, you know, I talk to, still going to schools, you talk to kids, just talk to some fifth graders, half the class wanted to be basketball players.
Right, right.
But other half wanted to be rappers.
Right.
Well, all y'all not going to be basketball players or rappers.
Right.
But if any of you will be, it will be because you have learned what it takes to do it and you not let anything stop you. But the message that we gave those kids was, in the music business and the sports business, there's a lot of jobs besides the one who's dribbling the ball or standing with the microphone.
Right.
A lot of ways. And some of those ways, including owning the team, is more lucrative.
Yeah.
So
that was why I was the engineer for Cavs games, for Cleveland State games, worked up in the scoreboard room for the Indians, because there's a lot of things that you don't have to deal with, but you can go out and be, there are guys that what we call our network guys.
Yeah.
They travel from town to town to town.
Yep.
On every game. And they not only do, they do baseball, they do basketball, they do football. Granted, yep. Football, you're in the cold, but, and many of those guys are friends and offer advice. And they, why didn't you do this? Okay, fine. I get it. Brian, it's been a pleasure. I myself have always thought of you as a very stand-up guy with a lot of things going on, and you are a very positive light in this world of what is going on. I appreciate the knowledge. I appreciate learning from you. I will steal some of the things that you've talked about and apply them to myself as well as other people that I know that ask me for advice. And
you're not stealing it from me because I stole it from somebody else.
I was going to say, he who steals from me steals twice. So, right. Man, it's been a pleasure. Stay in touch. I'll find you different places.
Okay. Thepresidentscouncil.com, Daryl.
I will do that.
That's a place where we're trying to help other business people. We got a chamber, got a foundation, political action committee.
Yeah.
It's a place where we could all do what you talked about. It's like, let's all get through the door.
Yeah, yeah.
Just knock that door open for everybody.
And I know they screwed up with you getting you the tickets for Air. It's a really good movie.
Oh, good. I was in, where was I last week? I was in another city.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Are you ever home?
Last month I was home. I was home about half of the nights I was home. This month about maybe almost 2/3, but the last half of this month, I'm going to be gone for a while. It's going to be
okay.
Pretty busy.
Good luck to you. I'm sure with whatever you're involved in, it will be successful. From afar, when you look up in the stands and wonder who's watching me, it's me.
I'm always, always happy to see you, bro.
All right, man. We will talk. Thank you very much. Thank you for listening to Life Hacks. We'll talk to you next week.
Take care.
You too.